Pets Add Life, your guide to the latest in pet trends, products, and the joy of the human-animal bond. With Kristen Levine and Chris Bonifati, powered by the American Pet Products Association and Dog TV.
Well, hey there, Kristen. It's another beautiful Tuesday. Time for another episode of the PAL Podcast. I'm Chris Bonifati. I'm joined, as always, by Kristen Levine. We're the pals. We're going to be taking you through a couple of great stories, some great products, some great guests. And at the end, we're going to answer some of your questions. Kristen, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling great, but I'm also a little nervous about something.
Well, what could that possibly be?
Well, I'm excited because I'm going to Las Vegas tomorrow to celebrate my aunt's birthday.
Okay.
But my dog Tulip is staying with a new pet sitter.
Ooh.
So, and she's great. I think she's great. She came with a really great recommendation. She came over yesterday. We went through the whole routine. But, you know, it's still a little bit, you know, I'm a nervous dog mom. What can I say?
It's anxiety inducing. Actually, my parents, hi, mom, if you're listening, hi, mom. My parents live in a pretty remote area and they recently had to find somebody to watch the dog. And it's not as easy as when you live in a city and there's options. So yes, I felt that secondhand anxiety pretty personally as well. Best of luck.
But well, thanks. Dog. She'll be fine. And I've instructed her to send me text messages at least 5 times a day with photos. So that will make me feel
you're
better.
One of those.
But
yeah.
But meanwhile,
I get that too. I get the same way with the cat, and people think I'm a freak because they're like, it's a cat. Like, you don't even need a cat sitter. Like, somebody just comes in and dumps the food and leaves. And I request pictures, I request videos, I request voice memos from the cat if she's making really happy purring sounds.
You're a modern day cat dad.
That's exactly what I am. I'm a modern day cat dad. Yes.
So modern day cat dad, and I'm obviously modern day cat dog mom. But today's pod is cool because we are talking to an internet celebrity, and we're also talking to a PhD in companion animal nutrition. So we're going to learn a lot about feeding our pets.
That's amazing. Yeah, these were both great interviews. But before that, I think we're going to give you guys a couple of stories from the news. So without further ado, let's get right into that.
Kristen and Chris present Storytime.
Okie doke. I'll go first with my story. And this is actually a common story, Chris. We hear it from time to time on the news, and it's always a great feel-good story. But yet another dog who was lost was found 2,000 miles away. So this is Mishka. Mishka is, I forget what breed of dog she was, but she wandered away from her family's auto repair shop in San Diego. This was back in July of 2023. And lo and behold, if she wasn't discovered near Detroit just about a week ago, and it was all because of a microchip.
2,000, you said 2,000 miles?
2,000, yeah. And they have no idea how Mishka got from San Diego to Detroit.
And how long was she
eight
missing?
8 months. 8 months.
Eight months, 2,000 miles. That's I'm going to have to do the math. Anybody in my ear, tell me the distance between San Diego and Detroit. No, that's it. And that's an insane amount of distance. And how did they end up finding the dog? Was it a chip situation?
Yeah, she was. Mishka was picked up by a local animal shelter in the Detroit area, and they scanned her for a microchip. And sure enough, the microchip traced her back to her home in San Diego. So, but you know, I mean, and first of all, it's great that she had a microchip, because she would never have been reunited if she hadn't had one.
Yes.
But I can't, you know, I preach about this a lot on my blog over at Pet Living, but it's so simple to put an identification tag on your dog, because if somebody finds your dog, all they have to do is read the tag and call your cell. And the reunion happens a lot faster. But, so I always say the tag and or a tracking device plus a microchip. That's a trifecta. That's the best practice you can do to make sure your dog gets returned to you if they become lost.
I mean, that's such an incredible story. And I mean, it really goes to show you that dogs are still animals. And animals have the call of the wild, right? They have a way with nature. And my story actually takes away from that a little bit.
What is it?
So I want to talk about science. I am here
Let's
to discuss it. Science. So I read an article recently about a study in dog food, health, and nutrition. And the study has shown that dogs have actually evolved to be able to thrive on plant-based diets. So we're just saying, yeah, call the wild, the dog can survive. But the human-animal bond, as it's developed over the years, and our selective breeding and just the way that we've domesticated dogs has actually fundamentally changed the gut bacteria, the diets, and the study has shown the genetics of the animals to be able to thrive on more plant-based diets. So there was a really big trend in raw carnivorous diets for dogs, and that still may be a great option. But studies are showing that dogs can thrive on plant-based diets. I mean, I know that my family's dog loves carrots, right? He loves carrots as a snack, loves sweet potato-based treats and things like that. And it's actually possible for some dogs to survive entirely on plant and grain-based diets now, which is an incredibly new finding. Previous research, according to the article, has shown that dogs require some type of meat-based protein, mostly for the macro amino acids that help them actually process that protein. But just like everything else on the face of this planet, things are changing. Dogs are changing and adapting to humans and our trends. So
did the article say how much time, like how much time that's taken for dogs' diet needs to evolve?
It does not, but this is the first study I've seen to show this. So how long have humans domesticated dogs for? So unless they haven't been looking into this, but I'm sure with all of the different pet food and treat companies that have been popping up, there has been some money pumping into researching canine nutrition. This may be the first time that they've actually identified the plant proteins that are acceptable for dog nutrition.
Yeah, that's awesome. Let's include that in the show notes in case anybody wants to read that.
Absolutely. I will include both the article and the study itself for those of you who like to dive into those primary sources. Yeah. I love reading a scientific article because it makes me feel stupid.
Well, you ever talked into one of those?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh, gosh, but that's because I read the news article. I opened up the scientific article.
The Cliff Notes.
Halfway through, and I was like, "These guys, whoa! Science is tough." So all the scientists out there listening, your job is hard. I just get onto a microphone and talk, and maybe I'll answer a few emails a day. you guys are doing the real work out there.
Great story, love it.
Yeah, and I think we're going to go straight into some interviews, right? Who do you want to introduce our first guest, Kristen?
Yeah, sure. So we got to sit down with Brian Benson and Magnus, the therapy dog. They are internet famous, over a million followers on Instagram, and I'm sure other platforms too. But it was really cool because both you and I, before we met Brian and Magnus, we had already seen him in our feed. So we're already following
him. Yes. I think at the time of recording, 1.1 million followers on Instagram. Just an amazing animal, an amazing animal handler. Let's listen in and hear that interview.
Beyond the Leash, exploring the untold stories of pet passion and professionalism.
I think we're being joined by a guest.
A very special mega star, Magnus and Brian Benson. Famous on Instagram, over a million followers.
Yeah, I've never done a million of anything, so a million followers, that's quite the large number. Thank you for joining us. Yeah, it's a real honor.
Thanks for having me.
I know we reached out to you kind of last minute yesterday, and you agreed to do the show, and we know you're super busy with Magnus, and we're so excited to have you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Absolutely. Thank you.
It's funny, when I heard that we were going to be talking to Brian, I checked my Instagram feed. I'm like, oh, yeah. I've seen this guy.
That guy.
Love that dog. So do you get recognized all the time?
We do, actually. It's weird because we do a lot of traveling. So we've done cross-country road trips, different road trips all over the country, and we get noticed in random states, in random cities. And it's very humbling because you don't expect it. So people say, oh my God, is that Magnus? And my first thought is, how do you know who my dog is? Because I don't connect it to the social media because I'm just in my own world. I'm thinking, are you stalking me? Are you following me? And then I connect the dots and thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And you know, you start talking to the followers and the fans and then it's amazing and it's fantastic. But the first moment you're wondering, how do you know who I am? It's a little, you know.
Like a, there's a creepy moment.
Yeah, but then it's an amazing moment.
And then it's amazing. Yeah, exactly.
Well, he very may be the most famous therapy dog on the planet. So why don't you tell us a bit about what it means to be a therapy dog? What is Magnus's skill set? What's he particularly good at?
Sure. So we are a pet therapy team. We've been doing this since 2018. And we visit hospitals, schools, nursing homes, community crisis centers. And we focus on hospitals because as a child, I spent a lot of time in a hospital. I remember how just sterile and cold and miserable the experience was. So when I found out about therapy dog work, I was thinking, oh, this is a great way to pay it forward and give back. So we visit in hospitals, children and adults who are terminally and critically ill. So it's a very tough population because the people we visit, unfortunately, they're never leaving. And if they do leave, they're fortunate enough to come home, but they go back for like, you know, several weeks or several months at a time. So our job as a therapy team is to really help their emotional, mental, and physical well-being and just kind of brighten their day, lift their spirits, make them smile, and be that distraction from all the pain in their life. And he is amazing. Magnus is just incredible, just making people happy, and that's what he does. It's just hardwired into his DNA.
That's actually amazing work. Is this something that, you know, you had this idea and you wanted to have a therapy dog and you went out looking for one specific, or did you get Magnus and immediately realize, wow, he simply has that touch?
No, it's interesting. So I adopted Magnus as just to be our family pet. I've had dogs my entire life. I'm that guy who always said, I'm always going to have a dog. But unfortunately, my oldest daughter, Riley, has very severe arthritis. And we adopted Magnus, he's a year and a half. And I would have to give my daughter daily injections, weekly injections. She was 11 at the time, very traumatic, and she would be very anxious and very stressed out. She would cry. And Magnus, on his own, with no training, knew to just comfort her. It was just this innate ability he had to just make sure she was okay. And that light bulb went off that, oh, he's meant for something bigger, something more, something better. So I started doing research. I found out about therapy dog work, organizations in my area. We became certified, and now it's been, again, since 2018 that we've been trying to make people feel better like he did with my daughter.
Yeah, that's an amazing story, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm curious to know when you, Magnus is seeing all the dogs outside the podcast studio here. Poor guy's like, I want to make some friends. I'm curious to know how you became an influencer. When did that enter the picture?
That happened, it was a very happy accident because of COVID. Like a lot of people, I do TV and film for 30 years. Visual effects artist, and COVID happened, work stopped, our therapy dog work stopped, so there's no in-person visits, so I wanted to find something to just still pay it forward, make people smile. So as a goof, I started an Instagram account just to make people smile with fun, happy dog pictures, and it went into from pictures to videos, and the videos started going viral. We were on Good Morning America, People Magazine, Time Magazine, ESPN, and it started to just blow up. I had friends in Europe who said, oh, Brian, I think I saw you and your dog on TV. And then news outlets started to pick it up, and I realized, oh, this is not just a passion project and a side thing. I could actually really do this full time and try to make people happy, you know, with my best buddy.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Why do you think people are so drawn towards your content?
I think because there's unfortunately a lot of darkness in the world, and we try to do very lighthearted, family-friendly, fun content to just make you smile. And it's either skits, you know, involving Magnus, or I have two teenage daughters, and things that are relatable to people that they can resonate with. And we get these DMs from people all over the world saying, you know, I'm depressed, or I have stuff at work, or family stuff, or just pain in my life that they just need that break from the everyday. And Magnus is that break. He is that light that they look to just kind of give them that distraction.
Yeah, that's
well,
great.
And
yeah.
Also, too, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you are an amazing girl dad. You have
Thank
two beautiful
you.
Daughters.
I appreciate that. Yeah, they're pretty amazing.
Yeah, and they're frequently featured in your content, and I think that really certainly endears women to you, and to Magnus, of course.
Yeah, they're pretty great. I agree.
Yeah. So what if, you know, we got some listeners out there who are hearing about Magnus, they've always wanted to adopt a dog, bring a new dog into their family, and are thinking, well, I want to train my dog as a service dog or a therapy dog. I've heard some of my friends talking about that often. Do you have any advice for anybody who might be in that position?
Sure. I mean, there's certain things that before you become a therapy dog, I could just speak from my experience, that your dog has to have. So your dog, before you go into a therapy dog program, they have to have really tight obedience training, basic training. They shouldn't jump up on people. They shouldn't bark unless it's for a specific command or task. So before you can even get evaluated into that program, your dog has to be really dialed in. A lot of people don't realize that the therapy dog program, it's not a training program in the traditional sense. So they're not teaching your dog how to sit, stay, down, walk on a leash. They're teaching how to behave in that therapy environment, what to expect, things you can say or things you cannot say. You know, for example, when I visit these terminally ill patients, I don't go in and say, "How are you?" Something you naturally say to a person just out of, you know, politeness and kindness. Or when I leave, I don't say, "I'll see you soon," because unfortunately they may not be there. So it's really kind of, you know, your mannerisms, your awareness, and they also make sure your dog is really dialed in to perform in these very high stress situations, because there could be other dogs who are also working in these hospitals, for example, or there's very, very chaotic scenes with doctors and nurses running in because of this, you know, we go to the trauma ICU. So before you decide to be a therapy dog, your dog has to be somewhat bulletproof and really distraction proof and really just be okay with the chaos and having, of course, strangers pet them and kind of, you know, touch them all over and be comfortable in every type of environment situation.
It seems like Magnus kind of has the dog equivalent of a PhD.
Pretty much, yeah.
He's done a lot of school, yeah.
Yeah, he's done quite a bit of work.
That's incredible.
Yeah,
what did you call him earlier before we started recording? Because he's so chill.
He's like walking Valium.
Yeah.
He is. Or a walking stuffed animal. Yeah, he is like, nothing phases him. He is bulletproof in that sense where he's just go with the flow.
Some of my favorite posts of yours are the ones where, you know, you're positioning him to make it look like he just got in that position himself.
Yep.
He's so cool. He does whatever
very accommodating because it goes to trust also.
Yes,
like
absolutely.
I've spent so much time with together 24/7. So we have that bond and that trust where we almost know what each other's thinking.
Yeah,
you know, he could read my mind, I could read his, in a sense, and, you know, he trusts that I'm not going to put him in any position that won't get him hurt or put him in an uncomfortable situation,
right?
Which is great.
Awesome. So where can folks follow you if they're not already, if they're one of the very few people that aren't following you yet?
Hopefully they are, but Magnus the Therapy Dog, and we're everywhere, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, Snapchat, Pinterest even. And we also just launched a dog training community because a lot of people reach out to us and say, "How can I get my dog to listen like Magnus does?" So we're trying to help those people as well.
And I'm sure there'll be some special Global Pet Expo themed posts in our near future. All right, so everybody be on the lookout for those too.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for taking some time out this morning to chat with us. And it was great to meet you and Magnus and your beautiful daughter, Skylar, in person.
Same, my pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, I really enjoyed meeting him, and one of his daughters was there in the studio with us, and she was, you know, shooting all the footage and, you know, making sure she got all the shots. And they posted about in doing the podcast a couple of days afterwards.
Oh, that's amazing. And what's great is it's a whole family ordeal. Brian really gets his family involved in the therapy dog. I don't even want to call it a business. That sounds like a dirty word. The therapy dog work. Which is really great to expose young folks to that and the meaning behind it, because that's really impactful work. But I mean, starstruck meeting a celebrity. It's not every day you get to meet a celebrity dog like that. And they're kind of taking over the world. It's insane.
I know they are. They are. But
part of me wants to be like, it's so weird. But then the other part of me is up at 1 a.m. scrolling through Instagram, watching all of these dogs and cats do stuff. So, I mean, who am I to really poo-poo it, right? Like it's just the way the world works now. And they're awesome. It's so cool to see stuff like that.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, we can't help it. It's entertaining. And, you know, when you love animals, you can't get enough.
Exactly.
I got to do a solo interview with Dr. James Templeman. He is with Primal Pet Foods, and he is a he has a PhD in companion animal nutrition. So let's listen in.
Beyond the Leash, exploring the untold stories of pet passion and professionalism.
You know, I love doing the show from Global Pet Expo because we get to sit down in person with people like Dr. James Templeman. It's great to see you.
Yeah, great to see you as well. I'm really excited to be here and just get a chance to talk to you about some of the stuff that we're doing here at Global and some of the other things we're seeing around the show.
Yeah, and I've had a chance to talk to you a few times now, and I'm excited for you to tell us about Primal Pet Foods Kibble in the Raw. We're going to get to that in a minute, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about your background and what is your role at Primal Pet Foods?
Yeah, absolutely. So I came to Primal, I think it was January of 2022. So it's been couple years now under my belt, and I came to Primal actually out of about 12 years in academia. So I spent a dozen years at the University of Guelph in Guelph, Ontario, for those of you who are unfamiliar with some of the Canadian universities, of course. And during my time there, I did my bachelor's, my master's, my PhD, as well as a postdoctoral fellowship, with the latter two degrees being very focused on companion animal nutrition, more specifically looking at protein amino acid metabolism, which, again, in the world of raw and minimally processed pet food, protein's the be-all, end-all. So it was a very fitting way for me to kind of find my way into the industry, and it's been a pretty wild ride with Primal ever since. I am, I think, now the director of nutrition and formulation here. I always stumble over my own title. But when people ask me what my role is, I usually respond with a bit of a Swiss Army knife for some degree. While our team is very focused on ensuring the nutritional compliance of every single product that leaves one of our manufacturing facilities and ends up on a retail store shelf, I also do have a lot of interactions with pretty much every team across our department or across our company. So I have interactions with our marketing and sales teams, our procurement and supply chain, and then obviously a big role that we play within our food safety and quality control department, where my nutrition team kind of is nestled within.
Gotcha. So you truly are a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah. I kind of playing all the different roles.
Wearing different hats on different days.
Enough information to be dangerous within every situation that I'm placed in.
I'm just curious, what led to your interest in pet food?
I grew up on a farm with every single animal that you possibly could have come across, but I always gravitated towards our working dogs. We grew up with border collies. I loved them and I still love them. One of them, a collie just passed the window here and it catches my eye. So I always told myself I'd work with dogs in some way, shape or form. And it just kind of turned out to be a very coincidental path where I landed at the University of Guelph. Nutrition became my passion, and I got a very unique opportunity to do a PhD in companion animal nutrition, which is very unique across the industry.
It is.
So I'm grateful for my opportunity. And then when I got a chance to work for an emerging company like Primal that was very set on creating nutritious and healthful food, but doing it in a way that was backed by science and backed by research and validated the performance of these products, it just was everything that I wanted out of my first role in industry. And it's been a really exciting last couple of years.
That's fantastic. Well, we're so lucky to have you in the pet industry. And you are a true pet loving family, because I just learned that your wife is going to be a veterinary surgeon.
Yes. I always like to say we're both gluttons for punishment when it comes to our time in universities. But she is a DVM, and she's about 2 years away from completing her her residency in soft tissue surgery. So we're both very animal enthused animal lovers. We have a home that's already got more cats than humans in it. So it's been a pretty fun environment for us to be in, and it's nice to be in the animal industry without necessarily being in each other's industries.
Right.
Keeps conversations
very complementary professions.
Exactly. Dinner time conversations are always pretty interesting.
Because the most important thing we can do for our pets is provide great veterinary care and also great nutrition.
Absolutely. It starts with nutrition and it usually ends in a vet clinic.
Right. So let's talk about Primal Pet Foods. You have something new that you're launching at the show called Kibble in the Raw.
Absolutely.
Can you talk to us about What is Kibble in the Raw and why are you so excited about it?
Yeah. I mean, personally, I'm excited for it because it's been a ton of work. It's been 3+ years in the making pretty much for my entire time that I've been at Primal in some way, shape or form. I've been helping to move this project along. It's been a really exciting venture for us, really, to see it through to fruition where it is now, seeing product on store shelves, seeing product at this expo. It's been just a really crazy ride, but it's really been rewarding the last couple months, especially. We really have always been set up with the idea of bringing healthy and nutritious and raw and fresh food to as many pets as we possibly can. And we always understand that there's a barrier in terms of some of the consumer or some of the pet parents that we can't always necessarily speak to on a one-to-one basis with raw food. There's a lot of convenience and familiarity that comes with kibble. And we know that. We know a lot of the pet parents out there are feeding kibble as a primary base. So we thought about a different way that we can try and lend a bit of a bridge and bridge that gap between the two. And Kibble in the Raw was really that way for us to do so, to bring true freeze-dried raw nutrition, but in a format that's very recognizable and in a feeding experience that's recognizable and very similar to what those, you know, kibble dedicated households had always been used to.
Right.
And also, most importantly, we understand that cost is a challenge for everybody in this day and age, absolutely, right? Everything seems to be so expensive. So us being able to bring raw whole food nutrition at a cost point that's a little bit more, or a little bit less, I guess, of a sticker shock than some are maybe used to if they're coming from a freeze-dried or raw frozen background. It just kind of melded all of those different pieces together and came out with what we anticipated to be a great product, but what really is just kind of been better than we ever could have imagined. And also on top of that, we've been able to, and you know, go down the sponsored research pathway to really try and show and validate the performance of this product with empirical data. I'm a scientist, so I'm always going to be a data-driven guy.
Right.
So it's been a nice way for me to combine those two aspects of my life.
And that's why it's taken, partly why it's taken
years,
3 years to get to this point.
For us to get to this developmental stage is because it was a very complex process for us to wrap our head around from a manufacturing standpoint. Not that it's all that different in manufacturing technology to our previous products, but some of the inputs are a little bit different.
Right.
But also we were very dedicated to want to show and prove its performance, not just with us going out and talking everybody's ear off about it, but actually being able to have validated data that actually now exists in peer-reviewed published formats.
Right. Really, and then you don't have to rely on marketing necessarily.
Exactly.
You've got the data to prove it.
And we can provide some
it.
Tools to marketing that they can use that actually has some science to back it.
Exactly.
So, best of both worlds.
So do you envision that Kibble and the Raw is going to appeal to that group of pet parents who's maybe been interested in feeding raw but hasn't dip their toe into it yet because they perceive, you know, it's the cost to be a barrier?
Absolutely.
And that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, again, it's just that way for us to get into those few more pet parents' homes that are maybe, you know, maybe they're turned away from raw because they think everything is frozen raw that they need freezer space for and that they need to prepare and thaw ahead of time. Or maybe they think of raw as freeze dried only, which is so costly. And, or maybe they have a 60, 70, 80 pound dog where the idea of feeding a freeze-dried nugget-based diet just is astronomical in cost.
Yeah.
So trying to find that middle ground. And again, we're not saying that every pet parent is now going to have a full bowl of just Kibble and the Raw for their pets moving forward, but it's just a way for us to introduce some raw, fresh food into the bowl.
And that was, you read my mind because that was my next question. Is Kibble and the Raw, could it be used as a topper or a treat?
Absolutely, absolutely. Again, as a nutritionist, I always advocate for appropriate feeding. So if you are going to be introducing a new topper or a new treat, maybe it is Kibble and the Raw being that training treat or that topper, just to be cognizant of how much you're feeding and making sure that you are kind of developing or programming the diet management of your pet to, you know, account for that extra calorie, that extra nutrition that comes from your treat and topper. But yes, absolutely. This can be a balanced base. This can be a topper. This can be a really convenient and mobile training treat. So it really fits all of those different things.
Right. And does it look and feel like a kibble? Does it have the same kind of propriety?
It really does. The one obviously standout feature is that it's very light. It's always the challenge maybe for that first pet parent that goes to pull a bag off the store shelf. You know, it looks like a big 18 pound bag of kibble, but you pull it off and it feels like nothing. It feels like 8 or 9 pounds of product. So it can be a little bit of a shock in that sense. So it's important for us to also build that education side of things to really educate those pet parents that, yes, this feels like it's 9 pounds, but it feeds like that 18 or 18 plus pound of bag of premium kibble. So the kibble size is very familiar, I guess, to those kibble parents, but it's also got those little visible pieces of whole food raw inclusions that speaks to them from a health and nutrition side of things, but comes with that kind of light property that freeze-dried does as well. So delivering all of that, like light doesn't mean less. That's been our motto ever since, and it's something we're really trying to drive home with the education.
Gotcha. Okay. And from what I understand, Kibble and the Raw is available now in neighborhood stores across the country?
Absolutely. It's been available, I believe, since about early June or early January of this year, and we're really starting to pump up some of our marketing campaign on that as well. So you'll not only be able to see Kibble and the Raw in more neighborhood pet stores moving forward, but you'll also probably see some things coming at you on some of your social media platforms and such to really, you know, us trying to promote this amazing product and get some more consumers and pet parents out there introducing a little bit of raw, fresh nutrition.
Right. Hey, and I just thought of another question. Where would they find it in the store? Is it going to be with the other primal
This is the key, it's going to be on your kibble store shelf.
Aha,
so it's going to be in that kibble aisle, and it's a way for us to again, draw the attention from that kibble consumer and really start building and starting that conversation to get them moving from a little bit of kibble to a little bit of kibble on the raw. And maybe that is what they need to kind of platform them into, maybe moving to some other freeze-dried or even frozen raw, right? So anything that can kind of get that cascade starting and get them thinking about how they can introduce these products in at a cost point, again, that's a little bit more ideal for them to manage and deal with. It's always our goal, just any raw is better than no raw.
Right. Fantastic. Well, I'm so glad that you all are bringing such great innovation to allow more pet parents and more pets to benefit from raw food and to live their best, healthiest, happiest lives. You guys are awesome. And thanks for being with me, Dr. James.
Of course.
And have a great rest of the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was a delightful last few minutes. I look forward to what happens next.
Oh, give us the website. Is it
primalpetfood.com.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gotcha.
So check it out. We got lots of cool information and good educational information on there about this product. So if you want to learn more, that's definitely the place to check it out.
Excellent. Thanks, Dr. James.
Of course. Thank you so much.
You know, Kristen, it's just another person who's way smarter than us on the podcast. I don't know what the producers are doing, bringing in all these people who make us look so foolish and stupid. But what an incredible person, right? And the work that Dr. Templeton's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was starstruck himself by meeting Dr. Courtney Campbell, who we also interviewed on the podcast. Right. It was funny because his wife is going to be a board certified surgeon, and Dr. Campbell is a board certified veterinary surgeon. So that was kind of cute to see him, just be so excited to meet a celebrity in his mind.
Yes, there we go. Well, yeah. I guess that it differs for everybody who the celebrities are. For me, it's Magnus the therapy dog, right? That's where I sit on what really makes up a celebrity.
All right, I think it's product time.
The product of the week.
It's product time. Product of the week.
You want to go first?
I love this section. Yeah, I'll go first. I got a fun one. So this is a product that I, I've known about for a while, and working with Global Pet Expo, it's one of those products that I've really seen grown and become popular. And there are a lot of brands doing this, but I want to really focus on Yeti Dog Chew. So what they make is they call them Yak Puff and Play treat toys. It's essentially a pasteurized cheese that they make in the Himalayan mountains. And now I know what you're thinking. It's like, we're not supposed to give the dog cheese, but this is a very special kind of cheese. And the gimmick, and I'm calling it a gimmick because I just don't have a better word.
Let's call it the hook.
The gimmick hook. The hook is you put this, this treat in the microwave for like 30 seconds and it puffs up. And it becomes sort of crispy. It's like a really good texture for the dog's teeth. It becomes more difficult to eat, but not in that bad way, and more of like that stimulating way. And now they have this line of toys where what you do is you have your rubber toy and you put the treat in, and then you microwave it and it puffs and it expands out inside the toy. And it sort of becomes like a time engagement stimulation thing that you can put in front of your dog. It's going to give them, especially if you have a ravenous dog, right, who you put a treat in front of and it disappears. This will give them some more time with it, some more stimulation. It becomes engaging. They kind of have to dig around and figure it out. The rubber toys are really hardy, so really great for those really heavy chewers. Same with the puff, really great. It's good for gum health. It's good for their teeth. According to Yeti, and there's a bunch of brands who do a similar product, there's really no doubt. I wouldn't call this a healthy treat. You know, we've gone over a lot of those organic, super healthy supplemental treats. I don't think it's that, but it's engaging, it's fun, and dogs absolutely go wild for it.
I love this. And I pulled this up. So as soon as we're done recording the pod today, I'm buying this for Tulip. I love it. And actually, it kind of is healthy if you think of it from an enrichment standpoint. So, because, if the dog has to kind of work at it to get the treat out, they're using their brain, they're using their, it's a physical and mental exercise. And of course, they're getting to enjoy the treat. That's really cool.
According to their website, their cheese is nutrient-packed food that contains protein, calcium, vitamin B12, and selenium. Like I said, I'm not a scientist. I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I don't know what selenium is. And it, while they admit it is high in calorie, it is meant to be consumed as a treat. So that shouldn't be impactful. So check out the website. I believe the website I have here is just yeti.pet. Yeti.pet. Check it out.
Awesome. Easy enough to remember. Okay. So my product, when I first discovered this, actually I discovered it on Instagram, I think. And the first thing I thought about was this is a great product for a cat, but it's also for bird lovers. So it's called the, what's it called? It's called the Bird Buddy. Have you ever seen this?
I don't think
it is so cool. So what it is a little bird feeder that you mount outdoors. And this is to attract wild birds. And it has a little camera in it, and it uses AI. So when the bird lands on the little perch and is eating the bird seed, the camera is capturing its image in video and uses AI to tell you what kind of wild bird that is. So, you know, like I said, I originally thought this is a great enrichment product for a cat. You know, when we're recording this, it's springtime. So there's, you know, the birds are out. And for indoor cats, it's important that we make sure that they have enough enrichment and stimulation indoors. And one way to do that is to, you know, hang a bird feeder outside for them to watch. But the more I like dove into this product, I thought this thing is so cool. There's even a link on their website at birdbuddy.com. It's called mybirdbuddy.com, where you can go and you can see videos that people all over the country and maybe all over the world have uploaded, so that you can see the different birds in the different regions of the country. So if you're a bird lover and you have a cat, this would be a great gift for both of you.
Yeah. Or if you're just a bird lover, I mean, birds are an enormous commitment. To own a bird as a pet is an enormous commitment. It is not, you know, I think a lot of people think dog is like, you know, the most responsibility followed by cat. And while that's mm-hmm. largely true, you can't undersell how difficult it could be to keep birds. So if you're somebody who enjoys the presence of birds but doesn't want the responsibility of, mm-hmm. Taking care of them, this could be a great way for you to engage with your wild side.
Absolutely. So mybirdbuddy.com.
Mybirdbuddy.com. Check it out.
Q&A's.
And now, Kristen, I believe it is time for my personal favorite segment on the show, which is questions from the audience. And again, I'm going to preface this by saying, you know, we're not veterinarians. We're just two pet people who love pets. We're going to try our best to answer these questions to the best of our ability. I haven't seen them, so this is going to be completely off off the dome in terms of the advice that I end up delivering. But we'll see how I do this time. Any vets listening to me, please don't be mean. I'm trying my best. You're a lot smarter than me.
Well, Chris, I think you might actually do okay on this first one. You know what? I've got to find the name of this person. I just have Memphis, Tennessee. The question is, I've noticed my cat scratching her ears a lot more than usual, and she seems a bit irritated. What might be causing this, and when should I consider taking her to the vet? I thought maybe you would experience this with your kitty.
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, my first piece of advice, it's one of those things where if you start asking yourself, should I take the cat to the vet? The answer is almost always yes.
Yes, right? Agreed.
Like if that's something that's in your mind that's cooking of like, should I be taking this animal to the vet? The answer is almost always yes. Cats are prone to ear infections and all sorts of weird things that go on with their ears. There's a gazillion products out there that are either drops or like some type of ointment and things like that to help with that. I would say my best guess, if a cat is scratching their ears a lot, even especially to the point where they're creating scabs, you know, you'll see that with animals a lot because they don't have fine motor skills. They don't have the control for that gentle itch. It's either all or nothing. So if it's to the point where it's scabbing up, I would say probably an infection is probably number one, mm-hmm. which is easily fixable with modern medicine. So yes, vet. And then option 2 through 10 are all things that are going to need a vet as well. So if the problem's not going away, it's time to take the cat to a vet. They probably need antibiotics or some type of other product, which your vet would be best to recommend.
I think that's great advice. And by the way, that was from Nina in Memphis, Tennessee. So thank you, Nina, for that question.
Thank you, Nina. And thanks for listening from Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah. This is from Raj from Sacramento.
Okay.
And Raj's question is, now this one's going to be tough for us. Well, I'm speaking for myself, but he says, I noticed my betta fish. Do you say betta or betta? I say betta. Betta.
Betta fish. I say betta, but I think it's betta. But, correct us in the comments, people. Just go ahead and rip us apart.
Okay. My betta fish has been less active than usual and spends a lot of time near the bottom of the tank. Is this normal behavior or should I be concerned about his health? Well, first off, I am absolutely no fish expert. However, getting back to what you said earlier, Chris, anytime your pet of any type is having some type of unusual behavior, acting differently, is anything that concerns you, I think you need to talk to a veterinarian. And believe it or not, there are veterinarians that specialize in aquatics. Now, I don't know how prevalent they are or how you might find one, but for this one, I'd probably, I'd go to the store, a store that sells aquatics, fish and that sort of thing, and ask them.
I would agree with that. I would say that I don't think this immediately calls the attention of a vet. So I had a betta fish as a kid. And when I noticed that it was in poor health, its color changed. That was like a big indication that it was in poor health, which could be for a variety of reasons. As a kid, it was mostly because I didn't clean its tank properly. So if the fish looks the same, and especially that beautiful tail it has, if it's still full, its health is fine. Mm-hmm. When a betta fish becomes inactive, it's usually because they're tired of swimming around and they're literally looking for a nice place to rest. So two things I would recommend: may need a bigger tank, A, B, may need a tank with more features, and places for it to hide and get away. Because what you wouldn't notice if it had these features, you wouldn't notice the fish resting. It would hide in its little cove, and that's where it would rest. So you may just need a bigger tank with some more stuff in it. But I think a great first step, as Kristen said, is go to a local aquatics hobby or pet shop and ask somebody who's seen this a million times before. But that would be my best guess. And I am, I haven't kept fish since I was a child, and I have a funny story.
Yeah,
maybe
I'll share it
one day on the podcast.
You sound like you know what you're talking about, which is
that's
kind of scary.
Skill of mine. That is a skill of mine. I kind of always sound like I know what I'm talking about, but that does not mean I always do know what I talk about. So that's the big caveat to all of the advice I give on this podcast: is you should seek the help of somebody who is a professional. But if I spur you and urge you to do that, then I've done my job. But we're here to help in the meantime, we'll say. While you're driving to work today, we'll give you something to chew on. So
there you go.
Who is that? Who are we thanking for that question? Was that Raj?
Oh, Raj. Yes. Raj in Sacramento.
Yes. Thank you for the question, Raj. And thank you for listening to the podcast.
Hey, and remember, you can submit your own question if you go to dogtv.com/palpodcast. Just scroll down to the bottom where the form is. You can either enter the question via, just type it in, or we would love it if you would submit a question in your own voice. So there's a button there where you can record your question, and then we will play it on the pod.
Absolutely. Yeah. Be sure to go in and leave your feedback as well. If you feel like we're doing something totally wrong, if you have any suggestions for the show or segments you'd like to see, feel free to leave those in the question box as well. To, we're here to serve you all. And we're open to feedback. So be sure to get those questions and record your voice memos, and you'll be hearing from us. That's for sure.
I think that's a wrap, Chris.
That's a wrap. That's the end of our show. That's it.
I know you want to keep talking.
That's it. That's all we're doing today. Okay. Well, listen, thank you everybody for listening to the show. If you have enjoyed this episode of the Pets Ad Life podcast, please be sure to like, subscribe, whatever else you do on your podcast apps. Everybody's got a different word for it, whether it's or follow. That's another
smash
one.
It.
Follow. Smash, hit the button so hard that it does it twice. Unsubscribe and then resubscribe. Leave us a 5-star review if you think what we're doing is great. If you don't think what we're doing is great, leave us a 5-star review anyway and tell us in the comments what we can do to make the show better. As always, I have been Chris Bonifati. I'm joined, as always, by the lovely Kristen Levine. This has been the Pets Ad Life podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.